1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Welcome to Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, serving the Concord area family's car care needs since 1995 at 124 Store Street in Concord. Call them at 603-225-7988 or find them on the web at weedfamilyautomotive.com. Dan, good to see you, as always.
Good to see you, too. Yeah. Go Red Sox.
Yes, indeed. They are on a hot roll in those yellow City Connect uniforms that they've been wearing lately. So heading into the weekend.
Got to keep wearing those
seven
unis.
Seven straight wins. Yes, indeed. When the Yankees come to town on Friday night, for sure. So they're opening up a little bit of room between themselves and the other wild card contenders, which is a good thing as we head down the home stretch. But we will talk more about that later. We welcome our guest today, New Hampshire State Representative Manny Espitia. No, Manny, you say it. Now I'll repeat it after you.
Espitia.
Espitia. Espitia. Manny Espitia. You know, that's a PA announcer's dream. If you were stepping up to home plate, you could really give it some emphasis, you know? you know, batting third for your Nashua Pride, the first baseman, number 26, Manny Espitia.
I mean, if I was to play any position, I would have probably been first base.
Really? So I picked a good one, huh? Yeah. All right. Well, you are from Nashua and the current president of New Hampshire Young Democrats and regional director of Run for Something. Manny, great to have you with us.
Great to be here.
Manny, thank you for all that you do. I mean, you're leading on so many different things here in the state of New Hampshire and a leader on so many different critical issues facing the state. Why don't you talk a little bit about your role as president of Young Dems and also your role at an organization called Run for Something.
Sure. So happy to be joining y'all this morning. And so I recently was elected the president of the New Hampshire Young Democrats in April of 2020. I've been with the organization since 2016. You know, I'm kind of a transplant here to the state. Been when I first started in 2015, and so I wanted to be involved with, you know, with the future of the political sphere here in the state. I wanted to help, you know, candidates get elected, and I wanted to make sure that we could, you know, help any which way we can for some of these young candidates. And so I got involved back then, and, you know, canvassing, knocking on doors for candidates, it just was you know, I would contribute to them, and I decided, you know what, I want to join, you know, I want to join the organization in a position, was their membership director, and then in 2021, I decided, you know, our president was stepping down. I decided, why not run for the position of president? And so I'm incredibly grateful to be leading this amazing organization that's helped over 200 candidates in the state. You know, our goal is to, you know, recruit, elect, and train young Dems all over the state, and then hopefully make sure that they all win on their elections, whether it's school board, whether it's select board, or all the way up to state senate. You know, one of our most illustrious examples of our young Dems is Congressman Chris Pappas, who, you know, who he himself has taken up a lot of the positions from state rep, county treasurer, and executive counselor. So, you know, I think that serves as a great model for so many Granite Staters who want to get involved. They know that they can get involved at the local level. So we're committed to helping them out. And we want to make sure that this year with municipal elections that we're helping them out in that. And then in 2022, that we're helping candidates who are thinking about running for the county and state level elections. So, and then my full-time job at Run for Something is we basically do what the New Hampshire Young Dems do, but on a national level. So I get to work with candidates who are running for state and local office for the first or second time, who are between the ages of 18 and 40, and who are, you know, who are running in states like Pennsylvania, New York, you know, and all the way up to Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. So, I love the work I do. It's something that I think, you know, when I first ran, I kind of had an idea of what to do, but so many folks just they need help demystifying the political process and just knowing what it takes to run for office. So, you know, I'm very thankful for the work I get to do and to hopefully get more folks in so that they can, you know, be the leaders of tomorrow.
Well, grateful for everything that you do, Manny, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say that I wouldn't even been elected to the state Senate but for the New Hampshire Young Democrats' help in 2014. Aaron and I are so grateful for everything they did, and we got a lot done in the state Senate and working with you, Manny, on so many issues. Let's talk about some of those issues that are salient there at the State House. One of them is this so-called divisive concepts or critical race theory ban on discussing it in the public. Can you tell our listeners what exactly that's all about and what's behind it?
Sure. So, you know, earlier this year, we were voting on our budget, and we had actually had an earlier bill, HB 544, that would create this this language around prohibiting our public employees and actually prohibiting in the private sector as well, implicit bias trainings and things that would help, you know, alleviate and have, you know, start having some honest conversations about the way we look at race in our state, in our country. They recently, in backlash to that, they made they started naming this divisive language, and, you know, they said that they were teaching critical race theory, which was further from the truth. You know, most people are saying, oh, at school they're teaching critical race. There is no critical race theory being taught at schools. The idea of critical race theory being that, you know, that we are looking and people are framing it as being anti-white, but it's rather not. So I think folks are using that as a weapon to really not be able to teach our history and not being able to teach, you know, issues like around slavery, issues like around our founding of our country. So it's incredibly difficult for teachers to actually try to teach in the classroom when they have to walk on eggshells and, you know, worry about what they're saying. So this was inserted in our budget, the language was, and so now folks face the threat of, you know, getting punished if they say the wrong thing, and somebody interprets it the wrong way. So now, and, you know, then it goes all the way up to the Attorney General's office. It could be reported. So it's, you know, I always say that politicians shouldn't be telling teachers what to do. There's a reason why, you know, teachers are doing their job, and, you know, I'd rather let them handle the education of children here in the state and not politicians. So we're hoping that we can repeal that, you know, that language, because it really isn't, you know, they're trying to be framed as, oh, this is, we're trying to eliminate discrimination, but if anything, it's actually making it much worse.
It's certainly this is something that needs to be addressed, including in New Hampshire, the issue of racial equity, the issue of systemic racism, combating systemic racism, and, you know, banning discussion of it, including suspending teachers if they discuss even elements of this, is just an attack on public school officials. Manny, one concrete example of many of why we need to deal with systemic racism in the state of New Hampshire is a situation that happened several months ago, where on the rail trail in Nashua, a self-described group of white nationalists, NSC 131, did a bunch of graffiti, including the phrase, "Keep New England white," unquote, and "Defend New England," unquote. And for our listeners, this happened several months ago right here in Nashua. And Manny, you spoke out against that. A number of people spoke out against that. And then you were targeted by that group. And let me just read it for the listeners and what they said. This group, self-described white nationalist group, said, and I quote, "Anyone with the name Manny Espitia, state rep or not, has no moral right to throw shade at any true white nationalist New Hampshireite. You have no right to be here. You're an occupier here. and the days of these types trampling on New England are coming to an end, unquote. That is a threat based on your background and based on who you are. Can you talk a little bit about that personal experience and what transpired after that?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't think anyone expects that type of backlash, but, you know, when dealing with white supremacists, it shouldn't be surprising. There was some fear between me and my, more because of my family, because of my fiance and, you know, where we live, and because being an elected official, we're out there, we're pretty public, so, you know, our address used to be listed, so it, you know, something that we were concerned about, you know, worked with authorities on it, and, you know, I'm very thankful that the Democratic leader, Rene Christian, was, you know, submitted it to the AG's office as well to look into it, and they reached out and said they were doing an investigation, and, you know, I'm thankful that they took it seriously. Unfortunately, they didn't find that the claims rose up to high enough to warrant, you know, investigating further and pursuing charges, which, you know, I think that's, you know, it is what it is, but it is also, it's incredibly disappointing because, you know, I think we don't want, you know, we don't want the next time that something like that happens to be something that actually transpires in physical violence or anything worse than that. So it's something we need to take seriously in our state. And, you know, I'm filing some legislation to try to really put hate crime and acts of violence towards people of different national origin, of different genders, to actually try that into statute. So that's because I just think it's important. And, you know, the rise of white supremacists all over the country, it's very real, and we have to be taking it seriously.
And that's critical legislation, really, Ken and Manny, to tighten up and deal with the criminal threatening statute, to deal with these hate crimes, targeting people based on their race, their background, their religion. This is going on throughout New Hampshire, including the temple in the south end of Concord being threatened, other folks being threatened. So thank you for leading that effort at the State House to tighten up that law and really address it. How do you see that legislation moving forward? Do you think that there'll be significant support behind it?
I'm hoping there's significant support. I think folks can rally around it, and I think at this time especially, you know, we are seeing the rise of just, you know, of racism and homophobia all over the country. So I think that I'm hoping that other, you know, like activists and other just brown cities in general come out and testify for this, because I think it's just too important to let a fly by and to just allow the status quo to continue, because it's just there's too much at stake here, and that we need folks to stand up against racism, against homophobia, against, you know, anti-Semitism, and so we, you know, I'm hoping, and I'll let folks know when, you know, the date is scheduled to be heard and things like that.
Our guest on this edition of Feldis and Kale is Manny Espitia. And did I butcher it, Manny, or did I get it right?
You got it.
Espitia, I love it.
And, Ken used to do broadcasting, by the way, quite a bit.
I used to. Yeah. I retired many years ago from broadcasting. but Manny, it's great to have you with us. And give us a little bit about your background. We didn't get a whole lot of it. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Santa Ana, California. It's one of the largest cities in Orange County, and so born and raised there. Both my parents were from Mexico, came here in the 70s and 80s, and, you know, they built a good, great life for themselves. Both of them, neither of them finished high school, but both were able to find good jobs and, you know, be able to provide for me and my brother growing up. And I ended up working. I went to college, and was able to came back home. Decided I wanted to go to law school. one of my close friends asked me to work on Barack Obama's reelection campaign in 2012 in New Mexico. I said, why not? Dropped everything I was doing, moved out to New Mexico, and been working in politics ever since, until 2015, where I I was asked to work for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire, and it just stayed. It was just an amazing experience. I landed in Nashua. She is my personal favorite city in the state. It's just an amazing, diverse, and wonderful, wonderful city with, you know, that has a little bit of everything. And so I fell in love with this place and just ended up staying here, worked for other elected officials here. And so I decided to run for office in 2018. So, you know, I owe a lot of things to the city, and I'm truly grateful to be a part of, you know, not just the Nashua community, but the larger New Hampshire community in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long were you here before you decided to run for something?
Yeah. I was here for 3 years. And I've been involved. I worked for the mayor as his constituent services director. And so I got to hear all the problems that people would, you know, call the mayor's office about. I would go out and talk to folks and see, you know, whether they had, like, issues on their property or things like that. And so I really got to know the community really well, really quickly. And a lot of folks just said they thought I was the right fit for my district being the downtown area. It's one of my favorite parts of the city, as well, along with, like, probably the state. And I just think, you know, it's a fun, you know, I love downtown Nashville. It's a great place to hang out, a great place for families to, you know, have a bite to eat or, you know, visit the retail stores around here, like Sconces Jewelers and stuff like that. So it's one of my favorite spots. And so I had a couple conversations with some other folks, and they told me, Manny, you got to run. And I said, all right, fine. I don't think I'm the right person, but fine. And then, you know, I was knocking on doors, and everyone just the support from so many folks, it made me feel good. It made me feel like I made the right decision.
And now two casinos in the city of Nashua too. I might add, just yeah. A little aside, just as an aside.
But three. We have the Moose. We have the River Casino. We have Boston Billiards. There you go.
Wow, I missed one. I missed one. What was the last one you said?
So we have Boston Billiards.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Yep.
The Moose Casino, which just opened up.
Yeah, I've actually been there. Yeah, yeah.
And then, and then the River Casino over
right.
Downtown.
Yeah,
so.
I'm familiar with that. You know, I forgot. You know, Boston Billiards has been a staple there for years, so I kind of forgot about that one. But it's been there for a long time, for sure. But no, Nashua is a very vibrant downtown, and, you know, I love to see the how vibrant downtowns are. And, you know, I think of Concord because I spend more time in Concord downtown than any other downtown in New Hampshire. But I have certainly spent time in Nashua, downtown Manchester, and just to see the vibrancy of these downtowns, you know. And I think a lot of these restaurants came to life and did a lot more outdoor dining, you know, during the pandemic. And I guess to a certain extent, we're still in it. I think it brought some life and vitality into a lot of the downtown areas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of the fact that they're doing a lot of the outdoor dining, especially, you know, during this time. I think in the summer, a lot of folks just wanted to get out of their houses and kind of get and be able to just enjoy, like, you know, try to get back to life to normal as close as they can. And I think having that outdoor option is a safe one that was good for our community. So I think, you know, we'll see what the fall brings. And I'll also say, just folks are just trying to get outdoors more. We're also lucky to have Mine Falls Park, which is, you know, makes it. I was telling everyone, I was like, when you're in Mine Falls, if it doesn't feel like you're in Nashua, like it feels like you're further out. And because it's just a beautiful walk, and it's a beautiful one of our treasures here in the city.
Yeah, and as you said, there are a lot of treasures in Nashua. Manny, hold on for just a minute. We have to take a quick break. It's Feldis and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and by Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Our guest on Feldis and Kale today is Manny Espitia. I'm trying, Manny. I'm trying. Espitia, yeah. And Manny is a state representative from Nashua, representing the downtown area of the Gate City, also the current president of New Hampshire Young Democrats. How young are you, Manny?
So I'm 31 now.
Oh, you're still a young man. You're still a young man.
Back here, I was 26, so, and I was, been a journey ever since.
A rising star in New Hampshire politics,
yes,
and public service.
Yeah, I think you are, no doubt about it. And tell us a little bit about Run for Something.
Yeah, so it was founded in 2017. Actually, it was launched the day of Donald Trump's inauguration. You know, I think a lot of folks were feeling angsty and wanted to do something and wanted to take action after the election. And so folks, just, you know, we, our two founders, one of our founders, she said, you know, when somebody approached her about running for office, said, I want to run for my local library board of trustees. And she said, oh, and there's like no one out here that really helps you like prepare for that kind of thing. And so she said, okay, well, let me, you know, I'm going to put up a sign-up form on the day of the inauguration. And, you know, she wanted to help a few folks out, run for a local office. And then about 1,000 people signed up to run, you know, to run for something. And so she was like, oh, whoa, what do we do with this? And so they started an organization to help young people run for local and state office. And because, you know, I think that's the end of the day where you can make some of the biggest impacts on your community is whether you're on the school board, whether you're on the city council, making sure that, you know, you have folks who are well-intentioned and who want to bring, you know, great, good change to the area. Like, we want to make sure we have qualified folks. It's not easy, and a lot of this is demystifying and kind of showing people how to, you know, what it is. And then also running for office is always just, it's always an interesting endeavor. It takes some work, and we just want to give people the tips and the guides on how to do it. So, you know, I work with candidates daily, and it's one of my favorite experiences is just being able to help somebody who probably had no idea what they were doing kind of get the ropes and then just, you know, and hopefully win their election.
And Manny, one of the key issues for young folks and that you work with, and you are one yourself, is attracting and retaining young people in the state. A number of issues revolving around that, including the absence of affordable housing. And
yeah,
we've made some progress over the years on it, but it's a huge issue. Can you talk a little bit about how important that is, particularly in Nashua and around the state, and not just, by the way, for young folks, but it's for everybody, and it's an economic issue.
It is. It really is. And so, you know, we had some legislation. Actually, it's funny enough, our governor filed legislation. We'll try to support legislation that was defeated in the House, which, you know, was really unfortunate because a lot of Democrats were supporting it, but a lot of his own caucus wasn't able to support it, unfortunately. So, no, housing is just an urgent need. Folks here, I don't know if you all saw this NHPR article that came out, I think it was the Hampshire Bulletin article that came out, somebody looking and putting in about 18, 20 offers and just not getting the house. So, you know, it is tough. So, you know, me and my fiancée Adriana just bought a house. And it was probably one of the, we found the house that day, we put in the offer the same day, we went over asking, they were asking us to not put in, inspection, we were like, oh, we have to, but, you know, people, this is definitely a seller's market, but it's also you know, once you sell a house, you can't really find another house to live in. So
right.
Just the inventory in the state is low. And it goes not just for home buyers, but also for renters, where, you know, the inventory for rent is incredibly low. So the need for us to build more units in terms of, you know, rental units and also just supply for housing, it's absolutely critical. And the other thing is, you know, I know that there was because of the pandemic, there's supply issues around the building materials. So it increased the prices, and so it's, you know, if we want to make sure that young people are staying in the state, we have to figure out ways to make it so that they can A, find affordable housing, but also B, provide them with, like, you know, give them a reason to move here and stay here, which is usually good schools. So making sure we support our public education, our schools here. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of work, a lot of zoning work that also has to be done to make sure that we don't require, you know, these major lot sizes. But there's definitely a lot of, this is not a silver bullet, like, solution. There's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that we can increase our supply here in the state.
Well, Manny Espitia, great to have you with us. I appreciate the work that you're doing and working hard for the citizens of Nashua and beyond. And you know, you are, as Dan said, a rising star in the Democratic Party in New Hampshire. So, best wishes to you, and great to have you with us today.
Great to be here with both of y'all, and have a great rest of your day. All right.
Thanks so much, Manny. Thanks for everything.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Manny Espitia. A terrific name. Terrific name. I wish, you know,
guy.
I used to do the PA announcing for the Nashua Pride.
You did?
And I used to put, you know, emphasis on different names and what have you. And that would have been one that would have gotten, you know, really dragged out, you know? So,
yeah.
Manny, again, great work that he does, and working hard in the community of Nashua, which is a very vibrant one. And you know, the downtown, if you haven't been to the downtown of Nashua recently, it's really alive. I mean,
love the gates.
It really, really and truly is. So, and Manny is a big part of it, for sure. It is Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive. They have been serving the Concord area family's car care needs since 1995. 124 Store Street in Concord. You can check them out on the web at weedfamilyautomotive.com. We'll take a break and be back with more Feldis and Kale right here on WKXL. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. And Dan, as we discussed on our previous Feldis and Kale show, the Capital Arts Fest kicking off in downtown Concord Friday night with visual arts, live entertainment all this weekend on South Main Street, and really around the greater Concord area. And, Dan, I don't know if you've ever been to the Hatbox Theater at the Steeplegate Mall.
I haven't.
It is a very intimate theater, taking advantage of some of the open space at the Steeplegate Mall, of which there is quite a bit, but Hatbox Theater uses it very well. And joining us right now is Waylon Bunnell. Waylon, how are you today?
Well, good morning, Ken. I'm doing well, and how are you?
Doing real well, and Waylon is involved in a production at the Hatbox right now. Waylon, longtime member of the Concord Community Players, and you still involved with them, Waylon?
Yeah, it's only been 37 years.
That's it? That's it? It seems like it was only yesterday, Waylon.
I know, I've done a couple interviews with you in the past.
You have. You have, and you're kind enough to come on at short notice today, and we appreciate that. But we wanted to talk about this weekend at the Hatbox Theater. I have to admit, I've only been there once, Waylon, but it was a great experience. And I may go this weekend. There's a final performances of White Rabbit Red Rabbit. And I was given the concept here by, and I've seen it in some of the storefronts, some of the posters for the show in the storefronts in Concord. It's three different actors, same script, but no director and no rehearsals. How does that work, Waylon?
Well, the actor is handed the script in front of the audience, and nobody knows anything about the play. Actually, part of the contract is we can't say anything about the play. I give you a little background about it. It's by an Iranian author named Nassim Soleimanpour, who was a conscientious objector and could not get a passport to leave the country because military service is mandatory for young men in Iran. So in 2010, he wrote the play, couldn't perform it, couldn't get out of the country to get it produced, couldn't do anything, so he sent it out by social media, blog, and email, found representatives around the world. It's been done in over 20 countries around the world, and it had a 42-week run off Broadway. Stars were lining up to get into this play.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah. And nobody knows. They never see it. There's no rehearsal, no read-through, no director. They just walk on stage or handed the script, and the play is off. The audience and the actor discover the play simultaneously.
Wow. So they're given the scripts just before the show. So there are three different actors for every show, correct? They're not never the same three actors.
No, we've had 3 weekends. This is the last weekend, so we have 3 more shows to go with 3 different actors doing the same script.
Wow.
So
they don't see it until it's handed to them in front of the audience. They don't see it till they get on the stage. They don't even see the stage.
So what if if they had seen the show before, though, where they would have some familiarity with it, right?
That's one of the things. If you've seen the show before, you can't do it.
Ah, okay.
And if you've done it once, you can't do it again.
I see. So where are you getting the performers?
My co-producer, Lacey Long, and I, both have been in the plays for about 37 years. We were able to handpick the cast. So we've been doing theater so long, we practically know everybody. And we just handpicked 9 people that we really liked and thought would do a good job with a scripted improv.
Well, they've been drafted by Waylon.
Yeah. Well, exactly, right? Yeah. So, yeah, this is just an amazing concept. I had never heard of the show before. I actually saw a few posters in the windows in some of the downtown Concord businesses, but I have not seen the show. It's been going on now for a few weekends, though, right?
Yeah, this is the third weekend. We've had 9 performances. They've all gone really well. We've had good audiences. It's a very interesting play, and it makes you think. Some of it is very, very funny. Some of it's very moving, but I really can't tell you what it's about.
No, and nor would we ask you to tell us what it's about, because that's part of the mystery of this whole adventure.
Right. So,
3 different actors every show, same script, no director, and my kind of show, no rehearsals.
right. It's like only the bravest actors take this on.
Believe it or not, Waylon, we do not rehearse this show before we do it.
Yes, this is kind of the same thing.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to believe we don't rehearse this as tight and smooth as it is. You know, you'd think we were doing it, rehearsing for weeks, but it's true we don't. So Waylon, you've been involved in theater for a long time, as you mentioned, with the community players in Concord. Have you ever been involved in something like this? I mean,
an actress friend who was in the play in Portsmouth and asked me to come, and because we were good friends, I just went to see it knowing nothing about it. And
yeah.
I was so entranced that I was on the edge of my seat the whole night, and then was so entranced I noticed that another theater friend was doing it the following weekend, so we went back and saw it a second time. And twice on the 45-minute drive from Portsmouth back to Manchester, couldn't stop talking about it and decided we had to bring it to Concord.
And you did.
In 2 years, and we're here finally.
White Rabbit, Red Rabbit at the Hatbox Theater, Steeplegate Mall. And I'm sure many people who are listening to us right now, Waylon, have never been to the theater. As I say, I was there just once, but it's this weekend, correct? The 24th, 25th, and 26th.
Right. You can get tickets at the door, or you can go online to hatboxnh.com, and it's on the homepage if you scroll down a bit.
Yeah. So what else is coming up? I know there's quite a schedule of events coming up at the Hatbox.
I think the next production is Greater Tuna.
Yeah.
Andrew Pinard is one of the actors in that production. I think it starts early October.
Yeah.
For the community players, we're having Barefoot in the Park back at the City Auditorium in October.
Oh, great.
And then there's an MTI show called All Together Now, which the Children's Theater Project is doing in November.
Oh, terrific. And the community players in Concord, I mean, they've been around. I know you've been in 32 years, Waylon, but how long has the group been around?
Well, we're the oldest community theater group in northern New England, and we were formed in 1927, so we've been around for 94 seasons.
Man, oh, man.
Wow.
That is really something, and producing great shows at the Audi, and it's terrific. I mean, you guys do a fantastic job with any production that you do. And you said,
thank you very much.
Barefoot in the Park, when in October?
No, I knew you'd ask.
No.
I think it's around the 15th or 16th, but again,
we should have rehearsed.
Go to communityplayersofconcord.org and get the dates and be able to buy tickets.
And anything else?
It's October 15th to the 17th at the auditorium.
Through the 17th. And a lot of work goes into these shows and, you know, the... you know, you see the actors and the actresses on stage doing a fantastic job, but a lot of times, Waylon, you never think about what goes on behind the scenes and the people who, you know, do the costumes and the carpentry for the sets and all that sort of thing.
Right. It's dozens of people and hundreds of hours of work on top of all the rehearsing and, you know, directing and staging and all that. It's amazing. It's all volunteer, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's for the love of theater, right? That's what it comes down to. And so you have Barefoot in the Park and anything else this season?
We're working on a February production called Last Gas. We haven't completely settled it yet, but it's a play by John Cariani, who people would remember in Concord because we did Almost Maine at the City Auditorium, and the Hatbox did... can't think of the name. Lovesick. They're both vignette plays, but Last Gas is a full-length regular play.
So now...
We're going to get that up in February.
When people show up at the Hatbox this weekend, what are the COVID protocols that you have in place?
Oh, the Hatbox is incredibly safe theater. They do routine cleanings. Masks are required by the audience and the staff. They only have drinks. They don't serve snacks. This play has no intermission, so that's not a problem. But it's a very safe theater space with everybody masked. Oh, and they do social distance seating, too. Every party has an empty seat on each side of it.
Well, good, good.
Yeah.
So it's a very intimate setting. You're very close to the action, as it were. So if you get the opportunity, it's really intriguing to me. This and so the actors are on stage holding scripts, correct?
Yeah, they're reading a script that they're handed in front of the audience that they've never seen. And
right.
They just start the play. So, yeah, it's just jumping off the ledge and flying.
It's like Feldis and Kale. Every time we turn on the microphones, we never know what's going to happen next.
Right, and we jump off that ledge. Sometimes you fly. Sometimes it just goes kaplunk, you know?
Well, so far we've flown for 6 performances in a row, so I expect we'll be flying for the last 3.
Has the attendance been pretty good?
It's been very good.
Yeah, good.
We had one sold-out house. Hatbox is selling 50 to 60% of its house, which is only 99 seats. So...
Yeah.
We're only selling 50 to 60, but one night we had 64. The other nights we had audiences in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
So, and it's shaping up to do the same this weekend. So,
very good.
A few more tickets available on Saturday night, but there's tickets available for all shows.
Outstanding. Well, Waylon, you're doing a great job, and I know we're looking forward to Barefoot in the Park. Coming up at the Audi in October, great show, and looking forward this weekend to White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, at the Hatbox Theater. So, good luck and thanks for joining us on short notice today, Waylon.
Oh, thank you very much, Ken. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Waylon Bunnell from the Community Players of Concord, who do a fantastic job. And now the Hatbox Theater with this production, which is kind of intriguing to me.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
It is Feldis and Kale, another intriguing platform here on WKXL. You never know where the conversation is going to go. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, Dan and the gang, serving the needs of Concord's families for many, many years. Since 1995 at 124 Store Street. You can call 225-7988 if you want to make an appointment. Bobby and Charlie are standing by at the desk and always willing to help you out, make an appointment at Weed Family Automotive in Concord. We'll take a break, wrap things up right after these words. 1039-1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back. It's Feldis and Kale. Great to have you joining us wherever you may be. And you can access all of the great programming. If you miss a show, whether it's this one, whether it's some of the great shows that Matt Robeson and Paul Hodes do here on the station, you can hear those programs when they're live on the radio or anytime at nhtalkradio.com. They're all right there.
All right there.
Yeah. And I'm doing a new show.
You are?
I am. I am with Jane Cormier. It's called In Touch with Kale and Cormier. And that one I get top billing.
There you go.
I get second billing, but that one I get top billing. But that's what's on the marquee anyway. But Jane kind of runs the show. But we talk about a number of things, local entertainment and education and all kinds of things that are going on. So all kinds of diverse programming here on 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com, and coming soon, the Boston Celtics.
You got it.
So there you go. Now, this weekend, Dan, at Delta Dental Stadium, I always go to call it Northeast Delta Dental Stadium because that's what it was known as for many years. But it's, they've cut it down to Delta Dental Stadium. It's going to be a rematch of the New Hampshire Conservation Officers versus the Maine Game Wardens in a great softball game, the second annual Northwoods Throwdown. And Northwoods Law has become a very popular TV show Animal Planet. And people can see it. They can access that on YouTube. And if they've never seen the show, all the episodes are on YouTube and probably other places. I have no idea. But it's this Saturday. And the action begins at 3 o'clock at Delta Dental Stadium. It's going to be a great these guys, these game wardens and conservation officers have become real celebrities. Because they've been on national TV years.
Yeah.
And I hear that they have sold for this game on Saturday, they have sold about 4,500 tickets already.
That's more than the average attendance of the Fisher Cats, I think.
It is. Yes, it is. No question about it. Of course, this is, once a year thing.
Yep.
And they have played one game. They want to do this every year. They didn't have one last year because of the pandemic, but they did it in 2019. They had it at Hadlock Field, where the Portland Sea Dogs play in Maine, and New Hampshire defeated Maine in that one. So you know that the Maine Game Wardens are going to be out for revenge.
Is this something that you can participate in on DraftKings this particular game?
I don't believe so. I have to check it out, but I don't believe so. I don't believe so, Dan. One of the few events you cannot bet on DraftKings. But it's Maine versus New Hampshire. You probably have seen Northwoods Law at least a time or two.
Yep.
And tickets are only $10. So it goes to benefit the New Hampshire and Maine Operation Game Thief chapters, Make-A-Wish Maine, and New Hampshire's Barry Camp. And you can buy your tickets today before they sell out. And it's going to be a great event. I'm going to be there. I know
that's great.
My friend Peter St. James is going to be
there. Oh, good.
Incomparable Peter St. James, who knows a lot more about hunting and fishing than I do. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be Saturday. Gates open at 1, and all the action takes place at 3. There's an autograph signing afterwards, too.
That's good. That's good.
It won't involve Peter or myself, because nobody wants our autograph. But these game wardens and conservation officers, people love.
Well, the game wardens, conservation officers, and our fish and game folks generally just do a wonderful, wonderful job with very limited resources. And, you know, credit to them for all that they do for our state. Let's have some fun on Saturday.
And that'll do it for this edition of Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, brought to you by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive.